Blog Talk Radio.
Frankenstein in a torn up Armani looking mighty fine. I mean the brother was smoking, literally sewn up with a needle and thread, put together with parts from the dead. Especially put his nuts on the side of his head. What in the world were they thinking? Dracula is afraid of life. He only comes out of his coffin at night, slips out to have him a bite out of somebody's neck bag. He's a vampire bat, sucking on blood, it's flowing fast. Except I don't know if he should really be doing that. I mean, I hope he practices safe stuff.
Monster rap, everybody snap, everybody groove. Monster rap, everybody clap. Monster rap, everybody snap, everybody move, everybody clap.
Wolfman howling at the moon. Hairy guys just make me swoon. Raised his hair with a doll sassoon. What? You mean that's a wee?
Can't see the invisible man. Can't see his invisible pan. Can't see his invisible hand.
Ow! Who goosed me?
Monster rap. Everybody snap. Everybody groove. Everybody clap. Monster rap. Everybody snap. Everybody move. Everybody clap.
Power of the mummy, aliens bursting from your tummy. There are monsters that I love. Freddy Krueger, give good glove. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Christine is the baddest ride. Roger Corman, Barbara Steele, Killer Tomatoes, Tabitha Peel. Hannibal Lecter, sick and mean, eat your heart with baba beans. Chucky's just a living doll, the 50-foot woman is awfully tall. So is the amazing colossal man, Gamera, Mothra, and Rodan. Godzilla tears up Tokyo, while the Phantom of the Opera steals the show. The Blob, the Fly, and the Thing, Edgar Allan Poe and Stephen King. Jason in a hockey mask, zombies, freaks, and maniacs. They're the monsters I adore, full of blood and guts and gore. They make me want to scream and holler more and more and more and more.
Monster rap, everybody now, everybody.
Freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Thurman, Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you're on the right night. But please check out another After Midnight Shows. Break on through with Pam on Friday. Sit in with a baby in a battle on Saturday as the team teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And these shows are designed for the shooting color outside the line, with rich raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thoughts and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. Happy Halloween, Merry Mischief Night, and all that fun stuff.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And what's up with you?
Nothing.
Just I get that. What's that?
Fall cleanups.
Ah, yes. Yep. I can imagine with all those trees and stuff, there's a, and the change in weather, yeah, there's probably a lot going on, picking up branches, picking up leaves, all that fun stuff. Have you had some nice bonfires?
Yeah, I got plenty of limbs to burn, but I'm not burning leaves. I just chew them up and put them back in the ground.
Well, that's actually a good thinking. More people should do that. It's good for the grass, but for the ground, you know. Smart thinking. Yeah. We got a fun lineup of poetry tonight. It is Mischief and Mayhem Night. We do have some carryovers, but we'll get to those after we get to our on-topic rights, which is that we ran a contest where we took quotes from various dark humor movies and, you know, told people they can be inspired by those quotes or they could be inspired by any lines or quotes from the provided movies, just so long as we knew what inspired them. So, it's going to be good stuff, and I'm looking forward to it. So I decided on that Elvira Monster Rap song because I thought, well, first of all, because I started going down the list of movies, and my second choice, my other choice was going to be the Transylvania Mania sung by Mel Blanc. Did I get that right?
I don't know that one. Mel Blanc,
yeah. Oh, man.
He's the voice of Bugs Bunny, the Family Sam, Foghorn Leghorn, and a whole bunch of others.
Okay. Well, Transylvania Mania is from the Young Frankenstein soundtrack, and it's sung by, is it Mel Brooks or Mel Blanc? I forget. Who is it that does Young Frankenstein?
Mel Brooks. Two different people. Mel Blanc is the with the cartoon voice. Mel Brooks was the comedian and movie maker.
That's right. Yes. So, yeah. But you know what I'm talking about. Yes. So that one was a funny one. But, you know, I thought, you know what, I want to go with the, first of all, I liked the catchy beat. Although the lyrics didn't come across quite as well as they do when you're listening to it on YouTube for some reason. I feel like Blog Talk Studio kind of distorts things. But, you know, it listed all these classic monsters and classic horror movies, that it just fit so well with tonight's topic, and it was just really catchy. Yeah. So good stuff. Well, I guess whenever you're ready, we can get the ball rolling.
All righty. Let's do it.
All right. Well, I have decided that our first right for the night is not going to be one from the contest, but I am going to put this up because he's always supportive of our shows, especially when it comes to providing levity and humor, and, of course, is always well-read in your voice. So we get to start the show out with Merry Mischief by Lawrence67. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Merry Mischief. Little Tarzan runs through the jungle. Hey, my boy, huff, huff, pant, pant. I say, What you doing there, youngster? Huff, huff. I'm a run through the jungle. Now, my boy, slow down. Quack. Stop. Now, tell me why you're running through the jungle. You're the son of the king of the jungle. You can walk through the jungle. No, no. Got to run through the jungle. I say, listen up, little turd. I mean, little Taurus. You don't have to run. Swoosh. Yes. I say, what the hell was that? Flaming arrows from cannibals. They mad and hungry. Flaming arrows? Eat them up, little Taurus. Appetizer, a big rooster barbecue rotisserie. Yum, yum. Huh? Yikes, my biscuits are burning. Run! Excuse me coming through. Yikes. Run through the jungle. Run through the jungle. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. What a fun way to start the show. That rooster reminds me of the rooster from Foghorn Leghorn from the Bugs Bunny cartoon. I say, boy,
what you doing? You're just a little chicken hawk. I'm a big old rooster. I say, boy, what you doing?
Exactly. But I thought this was a wonderful narration. I love the way you read it, Rex, especially with the sound effects of the huff, huff, pam, pam, swoosh, yikes, I say, what the hell was that? Little Tars, flaming arrows from cannibals, they mad and hungry. I mean, all the way through, it's just thoroughly entertaining and a fun way to start the show. I have to say, another one of my favorite lines here, and I do enjoy it all the way through, is, huh? Yikes. My biscuits are burning. Oh, that's great.
Nice. Well, yeah, this was a bit different. I haven't seen Little Taurus in quite a while, and the rooster is a new turn, considering you don't find roosters in jungles, but hell, why not? Barbecue rotisserie chicken? Yes, fun for cannibals. And, yeah, he does drop in on the little Taurus as little turd because he's not quite the big one yet. So he might just as well be the little turd, a little George of the jungle. Smack, watch out for the tree. Whop.
Oh, man. Oh, I remember my kid wanted to watch George of the Jungle. The movie, not the cartoon, although they watched the cartoon too, but that over and over again when they were little. But that was fun stuff.
Well, that was with Brendan Fraser.
Yep. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Oh, and I see Uncle Ernie hanging out in Late Night Poets. Hello, Uncle Ernie. Good to see you. Glad you could be hanging out.
God, that reminds me. Uncle Ernie, Auntie Jean, let him in. Who's that knocking at the door? Who's that ringing my bell?
So who is it?
You don't remember that, right? That would be, I think it's Admiral Halsey, Uncle Ernie, the song from Paul McCartney, 1971, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Well, the song does sound familiar. I just didn't know who sang it. But very cool. By the way, lined up the drinks, pre-drinks for anyone as long as they turn in their keys. All right, so.
All right, so where are we going there?
Up next we have I guess the name of the title has changed. It is now Their Fountain of Youth Crumbled by Jenny the Deep. There was a man once well known who they thought had a heart of gold. two women mischievously fought over his heart and soul, yet to be forever young was their ultimate goal. Sold their souls for such a farce of immortality, but forever slowly becomes a poisonous reality. Lost all sense of control and accountability, insufferably, these women now live together for all eternity. From within truly became them. Boredom of an immortal life takes over again. Lost their lover, lost their friend. Now a tragic end for these frenemies is set to begin. As he floats to the heavenly skies, these women meet their own demise. Ugliness they never could disguise, for it has also consumed them on the inside. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Nice note to the original title of the piece. That was what Boredom Lives and Death Becomes Her. Reminds me of that movie, Death Becomes Her. That was a good movie. Funny. Anyway, this does walk on a little bit of a different tread, though, since they were at odds and, well, frenemies, so to speak, fighting over a singularity, but they couldn't die until, well, I guess the back end, their own demise is their outlook on life itself, since they have nothing really to live for except the poisonous of their own tongue, so to speak. And they've got each other to keep them company. So I guess their own misery deserves each other.
Yep, so true. You know what? That is so true. Misery does love company. I thought this was a really nice kind of a recap of the original, or a kind of a, you could tell the prompt she used is a springboard. I like that she chose to write it in rhyme to give it a different voice, you know. And I like that she gave a nod to the original with some great word choicing. Like, I thought using the word frenemies, as you brought that up, was great, because that's really what they were. They were, you know, frenemies. And so that was a great word choice there. I also like the use of the word farce. Sold their souls for such a farce of immortality. And then, let's see, what else? As he floats to the heavenly skies, these women meet their own demise. Ugliness they can never truly could disguise, but also consume them on the inside. And, you know, and really, well, that was definitely a funny movie. It was definitely also a movie with a lesson to be learned. And that was that ugliness comes in many forms, and especially all on the inside. So very well done.
Nice. Where are we going next?
All right. Let's see here. Up next, we have Hearts and Fangs by Jody Melton. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Hearts and Fangs by Jody Melton. In a dim-lit room where shadows dance, the lost boys flicker a haunting romance. With popcorn in hand and my love by my side, the tale of the undead our motion did guide. The lure of the night and a life free of age, the call of the wild, the vampire sage, a metaphor hidden in fangs and in blood, of teenage rebellion and a passionate flood. The boardwalk's allure with its vibrant night scene, the timing was right, or so it seemed. I yawned and stretched, envisioning where my hand would be. Abruptly she slid away from me. The thirst for adventure, the pull of the night's bliss, mixed with confusion and the thrill of my first move, missed. David's cold gaze and Michael's descent, a dance between freedom and youthful lament. Yet as I watched by her side, her hand covered mine, I felt a love immortal. I had a feeling so fine to be young and in love, and the world at our feet, the lost boys, a backdrop, made that moment complete. The danger of choice and the ties that we bind, the fear of growing up, leaving childhood behind, the sound of the sax and the pierced glowing lights, the bonds of the brothers, their eternal fights. Yet amidst the dark chaos, a love story unfolds, teaching lessons of heart and the courage it holds. For in that shared moment with the screen's eerie glow, I discovered more of myself than I'd ever known. It wasn't just about blood or the nocturnal spree. It was about finding myself and the person I'd be. The Lost Boys wasn't just a film for the rite of youth, a tale of transition, of seeking one's truth. As the credits did roll and her eyes met with mine, we both shared a kiss, cemented in time. And poem.
All right, what do you got for that one?
Oh, I like this one. As great read, Rex, and as always, Jody is a wonderful rhyming poet. I love that he decided to give a nod to The Lost Boys, which was one of my all-time favorites. This, actually, when I was 15 years old and my parents asked me what I wanted for my birthday, I told them I wanted a VHS, not just rented, but I wanted to own the VHS of The Lost Boys. That's how much I loved that movie. I wasn't willing just to have it rented. I needed to own it and watch it over and over again. So,
until
wonderful.
That 8-bit of little machine.
What's that?
Until it got eaten by the bloody machine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Unfortunately, I had no boy holding my hand or, you know, in a dark movie theater, but that's okay. I had Jason Patrick, who I was going to run away. And as soon as I turned 18, I was going to head to California, find Jason Patrick, and marry him. As you can probably tell, that did not happen. But this is a wonderful nod to the movie, and I like how it made it not just about the movie, but the nostalgic experience of watching the movie and of young love. In a dim-lit room where shadows danced, the lost voice flickered, a haunting romance. With popcorn in hand and my love by my side, the tale of the undead, our emotions did guide. And then they just had some clever word stuff here, like the thirst for adventure I thought was great. You know, the thirst being the vampire's thirst for blood. I mean, that was wonderful wordplay there. The danger of choice and the ties that we bind, the fear of growing up, leaving childhood behind. You know, and I like those lines because they're very thought-provoking, actually. You never think about it, but really, vampires are very similar to Peter Pan and the Lost Boys, you know, well, obviously, and that's where that comes in, the Lost Boys. And wanting to stay eternally young. So I like that. I thought that, you know, he had some really clever references here. And a look at how, you know, we all just want to, in some way or another, enjoy the better parts of our youth. So, great write and very well done.
Nice. Well, good thing he doesn't go back 20 years earlier. And, hey, we're watching the original, what the hell is it, Exorcist. And that was a whole... I have a movie back in, 1973, 74.
Oh, my God, I remember that one.
Yeah, they had people running out of the theaters screaming because it was the first, kind of the first one of its kind played out that angle. But that was cool. This walks in that tone of, Rebels Without a Cause, the idea of the Lost Boys themselves, the motorcycles and the antics gotten up to. But it does walk in that tone of rebellion. And it was nicely played out with the introspection of the thoughts of him and her and how she moves at one point, and it kind of gets a little bit difficult, and then it finishes at the end with the kiss to cement their the movie going night they shared together. So nicely done, Jody.
Absolutely. Oh, and I see Selena in Late Night Polls, and she says, Happy Halloween, Pam and Rex. So, Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
And Selena, good to see you. Very cool. All right. And let's see what we have next. All right. Are you howling like a wolf or mooing like a cow?
Oh, where do you find a cow with no legs?
I don't know.
Wherever you left them last.
Oh man, that's great. All right. All right. Up next, we have Horrible Sweets by Peter Solway. And it goes like this. Decayed mouth of psychosis. Little demons patient for bitter revenge. Bite the teat of oblivion. Send mama screaming. Cuckatoos in the amped up evening. Angels complaining. Dogs howling, rich real estate all gone for a song, last will and divided testament by the once fertile rivers of mud brick Babylon, end poem.
Great read, Pam. As usual, there is a bit more into this one. Hey, you know, that sort of do as you will, so to speak, that angle at the mud brick Babylon. Kind of hits, also hits on that sort of not just the Babylon itself, but the Sodom and Gomorrah, the felling, the burning out. You can, yeah, have at it, and you know what? You won't recognize it later because it'll be all hell on earth. I like that. Nicely done, Peter. Had a short one. All right, what about you?
I know, you're going to have to write one twice as long to make up for that the next time, or three times as long, but yeah, short as it is. If you write one three times as long the next time, of course, you know who will be reading that, you. I really like the opening line, decayed mouth of psychosis. You know, I have to say I'm not 100% sure what one he wrote to, but it seems like almost like it's from the quote from the movie Scream, the one about movies don't create psychopaths, movies make psychopaths more creative. Of course, it could have been like just going off of his own head or whatever, you know, some other completely different quote. But I did like that opening line, the idea of how hyped up and psychotic kids get when they're on the candy. And cuckatoos in the amped up evening, angels complaining, dogs howling. I mean, to me, he has just, you know, painted a picture of the chaos, complete and utter chaos of Halloween night, you know, and you know, just
yes.
Great imagery, fun lines, and very well done.
Toilet paper, fresh eggs, and flaming bags of dog shit.
Yep. It's all there, right? All painted with Peter Solway's words. You know. Did you ever, I'm just curious, did you ever do anything for Mischief Night when you were a kid or an adult?
No.
Yeah.
We just used it to fit it in chaos because it got you in trouble back then.
Yes. That is true. That is true. I think there's just a right way to do it and a wrong way, but yeah. Yeah. Not that I didn't get into trouble as a kid, but the other thing is we lived in the country, so it was really difficult to do mischief night when you're a kid in the country who doesn't drive. So, yeah.
You just take a hay wagon to the hill, set it on fire, and let it go down.
Oh, my gosh. That's scary.
Depends what it hits.
Yeah. No, we were just good old little trick-or-treaters. All right. Let's see what we got next. All right. Up next, we have Say My Name by Stelina. And she was nice enough to supply us with a recording.
Daylight coming and we won't go home. Hey, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana. Daylight come and we won't go home.
All right. Bravo, Rex. All right. Here we go.
Beetlejuice. It's showtime.
Grave and have the rest of eternity to misbehave.
No.
It's showtime.
Great read, Stelina. Thank you for the sound clowns. Very much appreciated.
All right, Sam.
Oh, I did enjoy that. That was a wonderful performance. The way she captured Michael Keaton's voice, the character Beetlejuice, was just brilliant. Liked how she balanced it out with the fun Dayo music. You know, speak my name three times and I'll appear. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. My wicked games will fill you with fear. Great rhyme. I also really like my... I'm disgusting lewd and I really stink. My antics will leave you quaking on the brink. And, you know, she brings the character back to life. This is, I feel like I want to rent this movie again. It's been a long time since I've seen it. And as far as dark characters, dark humor goes, and characters you love to hate, Beetlejuice is definitely tops. And let's see. I like how she throws in between the stanzas the dance Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. And to my humor may not be to your taste, it will make you flee in the utmost haste with vile visions and surreal scenes where nothing is as it really seems. So when I marry, I'll be forever free. Take my hand, foxy lady, and come with me. I love that line. Like I said, she just brings the character to life throughout the whole thing. It's dark. It's humorous. It's fun. It gives me a big old smile. And it's just awesome. So very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. It works on the same line as the movie did, too. And she finished it out with that famous line, "It's showtime." And I've been seen in the movie having a bit of fun with himself and the character he's having fun with. The big hammer and the bell routine, that was funny in the movie. But there was this one. True, my humor may not be to your taste. It will take your flea in the utmost haste with vile visions and surreal scenes where nothing is as it really seems. So when I marry, I'll be forever free. Take my hand, foxy lady, and come with me. Taking out the best parts and had a bit of fun with this, playing out the roles, especially that marriage scene had them flaking away while he was trying to get whatever the preacher thing was to marry him and the little girl. So,
yeah, and then he turned into that giant snake.
Yeah, it's a shame they didn't go to a second one a few years later and really have a bit more fun with it, because that was a great movie. Oh, that was funny as hell.
That was good stuff.
Sore throat ever since she did this.
I believe it. Although I honestly thought she just used a voice changer.
You got to do honey and vinegar a la Elton John for gargles.
Right? Yep, some warm salt water. Or warm water and honey. All right. Up next, we have Ocean's Lair by Betty Page. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Ocean's Lair by Betty Page. Flying high, jet black, zooming through Ferris wheel ride, vintage carnival. Wind your way across tracks, deep down in the ocean's lair, vampires make love. Crimson drips from fangs, pouring slowly down her neck, bathing in sweet blood. Cry, little sister, watch them devour your love, hide in the shadows. Care for the young ones, the wild bunch of naughty boys, so mischievous. Getting off on lust, sweetest debauchery thrills, merrily licks lips. Addicted to taste, luscious, wicked immortals, indulging in flesh. End poem. And she took on the Lost Boy, too. So what do you think?
I like it. And that's a great redirect. Does not surprise me that she took the Lost Boys. I seem to remember Betty writing about that movie before and having a conversation with her about how it was also one of her favorite movies. First of all, love the 575 lines and the fact that she gave a nod towards the song, to the song Cry Little Sister by Billy Idol, which was in the soundtrack of the movie, which was one of the all-time best soundtracks. So I really did like those lines. Cry, little sister, watch them devour your love, hide in the shadows, and care for the young ones, this wild bunch of naughty boys, so mischievous. You know, she definitely goes the dark, sensual route with her, these lines, getting off on lust, sweetest debauchery, thrills, merrily licks lips, addicted to taste, luscious, wicked, immortal, indulging in flesh. There is something just absolutely wonderfully sensual and erotic about vampires, especially when we're talking about like vampires like the Lost Boys and Anne Rice, you know, Lestat, and then, you know, not necessarily the newer sparkling vampires, though no offense to anybody who likes those, you know, but these were like, you know, I think real vampires dressed in real, like, late 80s, early 90s gear. So, I don't know, just good stuff. I enjoyed this. So, very well done.
Nice. All right. Well, I just figured she'd pick this one, considering it was set in California from the move from the two boys and their mother. So, that fits the her angle, because she gets to dip into the ocean, the carnival, and anything else that that ranges within that movie itself that she likes to dip into with her pieces. But she does walk into this with her usual flair, a little bit of sultry sensuality, and dipping into her bloodlust too. Nicely done, Betty. All right.
Absolutely. All right. And next up, we have, What's Your Favorite Scary Movie by the Sea? What's Your Favorite Scary Movie? Cold Steel Blade, Kissing Their Insides, Silver Turning Red as I Watch Them Slowly Die, Blood Appears Black Under the Pale Moonlight, In the Day It Looks Like Corn Syrup, the same stuff they use in the movies. That's what they'll blame this on, the idiots in this town, this country, looking for excuses when the truth lies a lot closer to home or at home. Movies don't create psychos, but other things do. Things they tell us to get over. Everyone's got problems. That's the easy way out for them. Ignore the real reasons. Ignore the real causes. Blame it on the media. They might as well be calling forth the boogeyman. That's me now. What's your favorite scary movie? End poem.
Bit of twist of darkness. A bit of humor with that last line, considering she's talking through the ghost face from Scream. Yes. Blame it on everything except what you're doing to yourself to begin with. I like that note. And that movies don't create psychos, but other things do. Things they tell us to get over. Everyone's got problems. That's the easy way out for them. Ignore the real reasons. Ignore true causes. Blame it on the media. They might as well be calling forth the boogeyman. And that's me. Well, there's a touch of twisted humor in the back end of this. But I do like the top end, the descriptive angle that she drops in. Blood appears black under the pale moonlight. In the day, it looks like corn syrup, the same stuff they use in the movies. The funny thing is, it does appear black in pale moonlight. So nicely done with the descriptors in that. Thank you, C. All right, Pam.
Yeah, this is great. I love how it has social commentary and humor at the same time. She does a great job of bringing forth the voice of Ghostface from Scream. The insanity, and I really like that she brings in the mention of the corn syrup, the how they use that corn syrup and red dye to make fake blood. Blood appears black under the pale moonlight. In the day, it looks like corn syrup, the same stuff they use in the movies. And that was great because it gave, you know, that tidbit, it gave a nice tidbit to the idea of how those teenagers in the movie, especially the one with Ghostface, was big movie buffs, and they knew all these little details about horror movies and how the plots were supposed to go and how to twist them. You know, I think as far as horror movies go, Scream was one of the all-time best. I don't think I watched past the first three, though. I kind of tend to get most movies. I tend to get bored after three or four.
Stupid at that point. They take all the horror out of it. By the time you get three, four, five, six, and seven, you're laughing because the message has already been lost. It's like Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th. Yeah, let's take it. We'll take Friday the 13th in the space with Frankenstein. We'll do Freddy against this one. I mean, stupid. They lose their edge.
They do become more about the humor too. I mean, you just end up like laughing at them. Especially when you remember they came out with Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, another stupid one.
Yes. Oh man. Yep, for sure. But I thought this was an excellent write. The great dark humor really brought the character's voice to life. But as I was mentioning, she also has this great social commentary when she goes, that's the easy way out for them. Ignore the real reason. Ignore the real causes. Blame it on the media. You know, the whole idea that the problem doesn't start right at home. So great right by the sea and very well done.
Cool. All right. Where are we going next? Saw 10.
Ah, right. Oh, yeah. Then
well,
Selena says, what is wrong with Saw 10?
They're just putting out
yes.
The Fast and Furious 10. There's another one.
Yep. Personally, I'm pretty sure that any Saw, like, after the first four was probably horrible, but I watched. Have you ever heard of the movie Shark Night?
Yeah.
Oh
just
my
like Sharknado.
God! Oh man, I've never seen Sharknado, but I watched this movie Shark Night, and my daughter asked me what it was about, and I was trying to explain it to her, and I said, you know, if you've ever wanted to see a movie where there was scantily clad college-aged people, killer sharks, and psychotic rednecks all in one movie, then Shark Night is a movie that you want to watch. And that's what I tell everybody. Those are the three elements you want in a movie, then you need to watch Shark Night. I still have to watch Sharknado. Have you seen that movie, Rex, Sharknado?
Oh, hell no. Just the fact that it's sharks and tornadoes is stupid enough.
Oh, man. Yep. Yeah, there's some doozies out there, that's for sure.
You'd have more fun pulling out your own toenails.
Yeah, I'd watch it just for the laughs. I would. But we are up next. We have another treat. Uncle Ernie wrote a poem where he used the role on the perspective of the three voices of the witches from the movie
Hocus Pocus.
Yes, and our very own Stellina was nice enough, with Ernie's permission, to make a recording of this. So we are going to go ahead and play that recording. So let me find that. Here we go.
We're just three kindly spinster ladies, I said. Then you, dullard, Sarah, opened your mouth and they hanged us till dead. I didn't truly think they'd actually hear me, though I must admit I wasn't thinking clearly. Well, when are you ever, you absolute idiot? You'd be dangerous if you used your brain for a minute.
Sisters, calm down. The hour grows late. Winnie dear, you said we need to make haste.
I am calm. Now let's go and track down Book amidst all these creatures running amok.
Amok is such a funny word, don't you think so too?
I must confess, Sarah, I do agree with you.
Silence! You imbeciles do not comprehend. If we don't track down Book for us, it is the end.
I'm sorry, Winnie, I shouldn't have laughed.
I'm sorry too, dear. Let's just focus on our craft.
Then let's take to the skies and leave no place unturned. Tonight we'll have our revenge on this town, and they'll be taught a lesson they'll wish they never learned.
Great read, Stellina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. And nicely done, Uncle Ernie. All right, Pam.
Oh, this was great. I read this earlier this morning, like really early in the morning. And then later in the morning, I thought, you know, this is wonderful. And I've got the female voice. And Rex is good at doing, you know, voices, like, you know, character voices. So maybe he could pull it off, or maybe I could. But then it clicked in my head. So I had to absolutely see if Stellina could do this recording, because I thought for sure she could do something wonderful with it. And she certainly did. And what a great combination. I told Uncle Ernie earlier today, I said we're all going to be in for a treat between his writing on this, like, wonderful, classic, fun movie that you just can't think of Halloween without thinking of Hocus Pocus. And then Stellina doing this recording of it, which was so entertaining. And I really like how in Ernie's writing, he brought all three characters to life. And you know, the cackle at the end, of course I can't think of that movie without thinking of Sarah Jessica Parker's character running around going amok. I am calm, now let's go and track down that book amidst all these creatures running amok. Amok is such a funny word, don't you think so too? I must confess, Sarah, I do agree with you. And the fact that he does it with, like, a rhyme and flow to it that works really well, like, the back and forth in this, he really doesn't miss a beat. and some wonderful word choices, like the use of the word dollard, the personalities brought out in all three witches, and you know, it's just all great fun. So bravo to him on such a fun and creative write, bringing the movie to life, and Delina for lending her voice, which gave it that extra spark. So very well done.
Yep. He did lay out the characters properly, the bitch, the idiot, and the simp. Character-wise, he voiced them nicely and gave them all their proper intonation, the apologist, the truly stupid one, and, of course, the Bette Midler as the bitch of all. I am calm. But I thought that that three cackle, the triple cackle at the back end, was a perfect note to make sure you had all three going at the same time instead of trying to play them off one at a time, but all in unison. Nice touch. I like that. It added the right note to it. And Stelina did add the separate voices hitting on the notes to Winnie, as well as the simpleton and the one who just gives over the favor. It was cleverly done, Uncle Ernie. Thank you very much, and nicely done, Stelina.
Absolutely. Wow, I cannot believe there is actually a movie called Santa Jaws. I thought Uncle Ernie was joking around and making that up, but no, he shared the link in Late Night Poets, and there is actually a movie called Santa Jaws.
Oh, God.
Oh, that is too funny.
All right. Where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have The Cabin by Weaver of Dreams. And we also have a SoundCloud for that one. So here we go.
In the dank, dark wood where shadows creep, a wooden cabin stands with secrets to keep. Alas, as I find solace amidst nature's embrace, I'm unaware there's danger lurking in this place. Whispers dance lightly upon the gentle breeze, playing a haunting melody that only I perceive. While cold moonlight flickers on this misty night, a host of strange and eerie creatures take flight. Shadows slither, twine, and twist around the trees, unseen footsteps echoing, triggering deep unease. As an eerie symphony of cracks, groans, and creaks hint that there are secrets, maybe terrifying freaks. A distant howl reminds me I am definitely not alone, which makes me wish there was reception on my phone. That's when I question my own sanity, my grip on reality, this while primal fears become entwined with curiosity. The walls breathe whispers of dreadful forgotten details, as floorboards tremble beneath the weight of many tales. Ghastly apparitions dart and dance within the fire's glow, show unimaginable flickering visions from a time long ago. Each loud sound or flicker of light brings with it dread anew, obscuring the fine line between what's real and what's askew. As I feel a chilling touch that raises goosebumps on my skin, I'm reminded there's a presence I have to fight that lies within. But amidst this bleak scenario of utter fear and creeping dread, there is some comfort in knowing I am down, but not yet dead. With that, the sun rises, filling the sky with shards of golden light. Peace and normality return as once more day conquers the night.
Great read, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Pam.
Yeah, always good to see, hear, not see, hear Kate's voice. She's got a wonderful reading voice. I'm glad she was inspired by the prompt, the cabin in the woods, and the quote that went with that. I put that one up as a last, it wasn't originally one of our planned prompts, but I put that up because, you know, it really is just a funny, dark movie because it basically a lot like Scream, although maybe not quite the same quality, but makes fun of the rules of horror movies. You know, like if an kind of makes you think of Scooby-Doo. Like it says, the quote was basically along the lines of, if an old man warns you not to go somewhere, make fun of him. And, you know, so I really thought it was an entertaining and fun movie, but I'm glad she was inspired. I like her word choices, too, especially with shadow slither, twine and twist around the trees, unseen footsteps echoing, triggering deep unease, as an eerie symphony of cracks, groans, and creaks hint that there are secrets, maybe terrifying freaks. And, I mean, all the way through, great imagery, great dark lines. But amidst this bleak scenario of utter fear and creeping dread, there is some comfort in knowing I am down but not yet dead. With the sun rises, filling the sky with shards of golden light, peace and normality return as once more day conquers the night. And I like that ending because it makes me think about how there's always that one character that survives, and they like barely survive. They're like hanging on by a thread. It's like they're just about to gasp their last breath when the cavalry arrives. So great lines and very well done.
Yes, she offers up that note to the possibility of what is going on. But this runs into singularity because she hints at it. Alas, as I find solace amidst nature's embrace, I'm unaware there's danger lurking in this place. Whispers dance lightly upon a gentle breeze, playing a haunting melody that only I perceive. She's the only one here. So I'm, with everything that flows into this, and the last two stanzas, this is someone whose mind is racing a mile a minute. They can't sleep because of perceptions that they've got going on, the howl in the woods, the creatures that take flight from the tree because she just noticed or opened the door and she went out and checked on things, the shadows that walk around the trees because you got a little bit of light spraying through or the moonlight comes down and your imagination is going a mile a minute. And then the thoughts of the walls breathe whispers of dreadful forgotten details as floorboards tremble beneath the weight of many tales. Ghastly apparitions dart and dance within the fire's glow, show unimaginable flickering visions from a time long ago. That's the mind itself going at full tint because of one's imagination. And a loud sound of flicker of light brings with it dread anew. Someone who's scared themselves into this note and breathes a sigh of relief as the night gives way to the morning glow of sun breaking through the window. And, hey, is it time to go home yet? I think so. I've had one night in this cabin, and it's enough.
Yep. So true.
Oh, God. There's a dancing shark.
That is. He's he's doing the Macarena. It's a shark doing the Macarena. I used to work at a place where every morning they'd have us start our day and warm up by doing the Macarena.
Oh, God.
I know. Oh, no. Rex and I always scare the callers away. Selena said, thought there would be a lot of callers tonight. Guess they were scared to venture over. That's right. They're trembling in fear.
Step by inch.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
All right.
Oh, shut up. That's why I don't try to have any fun. All right. Up next, we have Find It All by Flip Sider. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Find It All by Flip Sider. Find it all great and nothing else. Blood now infatuate as into hell I delve. Devil's knife of pain in full blaze. Fighting a demon of rage. Feeding the hellish servers. Watching hell as all being released. And poems. All right.
Great.
Short
great
and sweet.
Read, Ray. Oh, I'm sorry, what?
Short and sweet.
Yes. Yep. Definitely short and sweet. Great brevity. Let's see here. I like that he devil's knight of pain in full blaze, fighting the demon rage, feeding the hellish Cerberus. I like that he brings in Cerberus, the three-headed dog from Greek mythology that guards the doorway to Hades. Very cool. I like that.
He's not so much to keep people out. He's just to keep everybody in.
I believe, if I remember right, wasn't Cerberus also the name of the dog in the movie Lost Boys? Or
I don't remember.
I don't remember for sure either, but I do remember that the one adult vampire had that huge, scary dog that guarded him during the daytime. I don't remember for sure, but I feel like that's a nod to that scene in the movie, which is great. I enjoy that. Very well done.
Nanook.
Lucky.
His name is Nanook.
Nanook? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ah.
And then there was the white German shepherd named Thorn.
Oh, it was Thorn I'm thinking about. Nanook was the one who belonged to the two guys that hunted the vampires.
Yep. Yeah. Well, no. I don't remember. No,
Nanook was the dog that belonged to the two brothers. Thorn
okay.
was the dog that belonged to the man that was dating the mother that was a vampire. And who Fluffy was, I have no clue.
Nice. All right. I guess this would be the night of look at this as the devil watching his handiwork being splayed open for all to see. Just sit back and have a good old chuckle with a cold beer because he's parched. Devil's night of pain and full blaze, fighting the demons of rage, feeding the hellish Cerberus, watching hell as all being released. That's got to be a nice note. Yeah, I can kick back and relax. I don't have to do a whole lot of work. I got plenty of demons released. They can work for me.
Yep, exactly. All right. Let's see what we have next. All right. And want to make sure we haven't missed any others. I know we got the one SoundCloud to do. And yes, so this will be our last write for this contest, and then we'll move into the carryovers from break on through. And all right, so we have The Horrific Tale of Sweet Madeline by Northern Powerhouse. And we have a recording for that. Let me find that. And here we go.
The Horrific Tale of Sweet Madeline. Sweet Madeline, the fairest girl in all Loncoshon County, blessed with such delicious poise, the sum of nature's bounty. Her cinnamonish innocence and strawberry-coloured hair made her a treat to contemplate, a girl beyond compare. Her fiancé, a young man named Bavaire, was rather sour, his bitter disposition driven rancorous and dour. Yet something of fair Madeline had proven so disarming that even brute Bavaire had found her genial and charming. Their parents were quite wealthy, and a date was shortly fixed, a birthday party and engagement fortunately mixed. Bavaire was turning 21, and on that very night, 200 local dignitaries would heed the kind invite. Lady this and Baron that were welcomed to the hall, found Bavaire quite odious, but soon fell in the thrall of Madeleine, of whom it was quite rapidly agreed she'd make the sweetest bride that any man could ever need. The news of their betrothal had not been widely spread, and Madeline had let amusing notions fill her head. She'd secretly instructed all the kitchen staff to make the tastiest and most indulgent ever birthday cake. But in her girlish glee, she'd asked that it be hollowed out, a space where she could crouch inside to hear the birthday shout. Then up she'd pop to shock Bavaire and dance or even sing, and show their gathered families her new engagement ring. The evening had been excellent, the banquet full of cheer, and even young Bavaire seemed pleased when told the time was here to bring the cake that really would embellish the great feast, and Madeline would fetch it if they'd let her be released. He nodded his assent, and so she hurried off to climb inside the sponge so welcoming, the filling so sublime. There was little room to wriggle down her sweet, delightful form amongst the cream so delicate, the gingerbread so warm. But finally she was sealed in, and through a heavy muffle she signalled they should wheel her in as one exquisite truffle. Bavaire was finishing his speech, and much to their surprise, the guests were warming to the host, who seemed to energize. Something he explained to them, that here and now, this hour, he hoped to soon be rid of his renown for being sour. The next momentous happening, which they would shortly share, would see a sweetness spread amongst them all who gathered there. And so it was he stood before his cake and future wife, brandishing a sword in place of customary knife. The fault that soon ensued is hard to pinpoint for its cause. Perhaps her cue could not be heard above the loud applause. Perhaps the serving staff had not been briefed about the plot. Perhaps the chef had meant to tell them till he then forgot. Perhaps our pretty Madeline was trapped beneath the sponge. But either way, the die was cast as Bavaire went to plunge the giant sword he thrust inside the gâteau so divine, crunched and rasped in ways that sent a shiver down his spine. some strange, intense communion that trembled in his bones, as if he sensed the blade pass on some deep and tender groans. Roared on by the gathered crowd, he scythed and sliced the cake, ignoring how it almost seemed to shiver, sigh and quake. Madeline and Bavere's families pleaded and exhorted, the lad must slice a piece for all assembled and assorted. Eventually they marvelled as their grinding jaws were pressing. They wondered at the oozing of the luscious strawberry dressing. Never had they tasted a confectionery so sweet as what Bavere had served up on a plate for them to eat. The host himself, he could not wait to swallow and devour, as some bizarre transforming force turned him from feeling sour. The entire room ate every scrap, around their tongues they rolled, and sweetness spread amongst them, just as Bavere had foretold. It was many hours till the guests would realize that Madeline had not appeared, unveiling her surprise, and only horror lovers with a certain appetite could solve the family's question, which revolved around that night, like Bavere's sudden change of mood and where his bride had gone, though at least they could convince themselves some part of her lived on. Yes, they often look at Madeline in her picture on the shelf and say they feel her presence somewhere deep inside themselves.
Great read there, Northern Powerhouse. Thank you for the sound crowd. Very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
Oh, that was great, wasn't it? Oh, my gosh. Perfectly grisly, gory, dark humor, and especially the wordplay and the twist at the end. Yes, they often look at Madeline and her picture on the shelf and say they feel her presence somewhere deep inside themselves. I have to say, I'm not usually a fan of long writes because they usually lose my attention. But this one, it grabbed my attention, and it kept it all the way through. He had this spot-on rhyme and flow to it, his storytelling. And, you know, it's just one of those classic storylines that dark humor works perfect for when you get the character, the mix-up, the miscommunication. Let's see here. Oh, yes, and and the irony that the main character was out to prove what a nice guy he actually was, by chopping up his fiance into little bits, that was great. Let's see here. I mean, it's great all the way through, but I have to say the part where she's wiggling into the cake and he's describing all the different layers, I thought was a really great attention to detail. You know, inside the sponge so welcoming, the filling so sublime, there was little room to wriggle down her sweet, delightful form. The cream so delicate, the gingerbread so warm. But finally she was sealed in, and through a heavy muffle, she singled they should wheel her in as one exquisite truffle. And then when he starts on the swinging, this was great too. Perhaps the serving staff had not been briefed about the plot. Perhaps the chef had meant to tell them till he then forgot. Perhaps our pretty Madeline was trapped beneath the sponge, but either way the die was cast as Bavere that went to plunge. The giant sword he thrust inside the gâteau so divine, crunched and rasped in ways that sent a shiver down his spine. Some strange intense communion that trembled in his bones, as if he sensed the blade passed on some deep and tender groan. Just a great rhyme, wonderful, dark, visceral imagery. And, you know, that dark humor, like I said, especially at the end. And they wondered at the oozing of the luscious strawberry dressing. Never had they tasted a confectionery so sweet as what Bavaire had served up on a plate for them to eat. This was great. And a wonderfully clever take on the prompt from Little Shop of Horrors. Very cool.
It also works as a grim fairy tale. Something
it does,
deep, dark,
doesn't it?
And,
yeah.
And delicious. The thought with the gatto was a nice touch because that hardens up a bit. He thrusts the sword through that. And then he realizes there's something not quite right. He knew it. He felt it in his bones. Yet with the roar of the crowd, he sat there and then just went to town, hacking up the cake, giving it out to everybody. So, and that, then the last line, a twisted note to reality. You still feel her presence because you ate her. You all get turned into cannibals. There was a horror there. If it's sweet you like, well, Madeline was the best you've ever had. And, well, she'll be ever on your tip of your tongue, in your gullet, and your mind. I did like the storytelling with this. The only thing would have made it a bit better would have been some nice eerie background music to go along with it. Maybe a little playful tune up front, turning darker as it went along. But great piece and great read.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? You have a good point there. It would be great with some horror music, you know, in the background. But even without, it still worked really well. And I definitely look forward to hearing more writes done by him. I hope he's inspired for future shows. So very cool. All right. Well, that was the last of our After Midnight Mischief and Mayhem. So now we're going to delve into some carryovers from the Break On Through Halloween show. And I'm going to put up a poem called A Queen Not a Pawn by Naomi Sarah. And Naomi was actually nice enough to be the one person that wrote for the contest that I ended up having to close down. And so I told her just to put it on the topic board and we'd make sure it got read, which was the Bauhaus and Dadaism costume contest. So I want to make sure this one gets read because I really appreciate her. Plus, I always enjoy Naomi's poetry. So, a queen, not a pawn. You move me around as a pawn, but I'm no piece to be played just for fun in your board game. I'm not for you to take, to knock down, to go through. I'm not a pawn, but a queen. So listen to the rustling of my royal gown as I glide away. And you look closely for your candlestick can barely light. Start being a man, showing kindness and respect, and not merely a wooden boy. End poem.
Great read, Dan. Nice play off the thought of chess itself, but playing out that angle with the board game as he's bored, so he's got to have something to do. Push around, knock down, go through, and that note, as you look closely for your candlestick can barely light. Stop being man, showing kindness and respect, and not merely a wooden boy. That's a double entendre note to put down in that last couple of lines, which works well with the thought as well. So nicely done, Naomi.
For sure. Yeah, I thought this was a great. I mean, I love the way she brings the voice to life. She plays off of the picture, which looks like costumes of chess pieces. She brings out the attitude of, listen, I am not a pawn to be pushed around. I am a queen. and she puts that little wooden boy in his place. I mean, all the way through, this is great. And I love her wordplay when she says to be played just for fun in your board game, you know, B-O-R-E-D, as in, you know, he's bored, so he's got to play with other people's lives, and she's going to have none of that. And like you mentioned, Rex, the put down at the end is great. And you look closely for your candlestick can barely light. Start being a man showing kindness and respect and not merely a wooden boy. Great lines all the way through and very well done.
What we got next?
That is a good question. I'm just going to finish typing the sentence, so if you'd like to say anything while I'm doing that, go ahead. You know, or you'd like to do any character reenactments or anything.
Oh, God.
All right. Quiet down, you lot. The show's about to start.
there we go. All right. Let's see what we have next. All right. Up next, we have Haunted Woods by Daniel Duhaime. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Haunted Woods by Daniel Duhaime. Through the rustling leaves, making a sound like bones cracking, beings that can't be seen rest upon its branches, guardians of the porthole into the nether regions, where the minions of the devil dwell. Long ago, the tree was cursed by a witch that was hung by its branches for practicing the dark arts of conjuring by making a doofa doll and pricking it with needles. Because she was disputing a land claim with someone named John, who came down with a dreadful disease of consumption, slowly withering away until nothing was left. When the moon is in the right position at night, the evil escapes, slithering through the doorway in a black mass, devouring everything in its path, like some ethereal snake striking fear into the hearts of men, possessing them in a struggle for their soul, like an unearthly vampire out for blood. The tree of evil is rotten to the core and is held together by the souls of its victims, whose screams can be heard emanating from its trunk, like an eerie choir singing an unholy melody that shatters the silent forest with melancholy music and poem. All right.
Great read, Rex. I learned a new word, doofa doll. I did not know that was a thing. But apparently they're little dolls that come to life and help out with housework. Dang it, Rex. You need to get me some doofa dolls for Christmas. So, or somebody does. If I would have known there were little dolls that came to life and did housework for you, I would have gotten them a long time ago. But, yeah, that's great. And I like his storytelling in this. You know, he really delves into the classic, you know, witch tale and dark mythology. You know, I don't know. There's something just wonderfully creepy and eerie all the way through. The part where he says, because she was disputing a land claim with someone named John, who came down with a dreadful disease of consumption, slowly withering away until nothing was left. And, you know, that is very true. I learned that when we did the witch show for Dave's show, and I had done some reading and researching. It's a lot of the accusations of witchcraft happen because it was a way to take land away from widows whose husbands had left them land and they hadn't remarried. And so to accuse them of witchcraft and get them sent to prison or hung was a good way to take their land away from them. So that was a really great detail that I think Daniel put in there. I also like that he brings in the snake and where he mentions the tree of evil. Like it's it makes me think of the Garden of Eden and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So there's a nice mythological touch to this, but as I was mentioning, also a great look at the devious insight, not devious insight, but the devious ways that people have when it comes to accusing each other and hunting each other down. So excellent, Dark Right, and very well done.
All right. Thank you, Pam. Well, it is a matter of the sort of consumption. It's on a tuberculosis, a nice slow killer, but people didn't understand the idea of a wasting away disease. So like all traditional, heavily interred religious in nature, always went with the easy thought, which was, hey, the devil's about. He's on foot, so is this witchcraft or is this something else? And they always opted for witchcraft. It explained just about everything. And hell, you put a witch in a dunking chair and you throw her in the water. If she floats, if she's a witch, she's a witch. If she doesn't, then she's not. But she's also dead either way, so it really doesn't matter. It was a paradox of stupidity because you give one entity too much power and they tell you what is, as opposed to using your own mental faculties. And that was the nature of the beast and easily attainable. So I like the fact that he rolled around on that note, even though he did hit on the fact that she was a witch and she did put a curse, which is one of those angles that plagues a community. As even if they adopt a notion that, yes, she is a witch and she did place a curse, all of a sudden things start happening, and it still goes to that note of what we believe. And in that note, whatever happens comes with that belief, even though that happening might be self-imposed in and of itself. So I like that thought. Nicely done, Daniel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. All right, and let's see what we have next. Up next, we have The Tree by Nan529. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us.
The Tree by Nan529. Life had all but left except for murder of crows. Withering, dry, diseased, frail black branches, stark against moonlight sky, eerie, shrouded in gloom. Mist slowly raising, as if from the grave, damp, musty, chilling, heavy air hung like a pendulum. Stories, folklore, myths, legends, curses surround its history. Murder, hangings, ghosts, witchcraft deeply entwined in its life force. Evil twists and turns inside its roots, traveling down to hell. Silence as the tree slowly trembles and nervous crows take flight, breaking the night as they scream out their cry. Under the tree, a portal opens, shadows pass through. Evil walks the earth, time grinds to a halt. Only the dead move with unseeing eyes. Church bell tolls in the distance, midnight on, All Hallows Eve, time for them to wreak revenge. Demons intent on evil endeavors. Before dawn, all all must return before the portal closes, for this is Halloween. End poem.
Great read, Rex, and a wonderful write by Nan. And I should mention that these carryovers are from the contest where the prompt was the painting Ghost on the Tree by Fran Bodrek. And I really like this. I always like when somebody plays with the word murder of crows. I think that's always wonderful. Life had all but left except for a murder of crows. It's always to me, I think, one of the best things ever that a group of crows is called a murder. I mean, that is just so cool. I also like how she brings in so many different senses in here. It's not just what you would see if you were right here in this picture, but what you would feel and smell: damp, musty, chilling, heavy air hung like a pendulum. And, this is wonderfully creepy and eerie. I really like that she ends with the line, "For this is Halloween," that she reminds us that, Halloween is fun, but part of that fun is the creepy crawlies and the heebie-jeebies that you get. Only the dead move with unseeing eyes. Church bell tolls in the distance. Midnight on All Hallows Eve. Time for them to wreak revenge. Great, great lines and excellent dark write and very well done.
All right. Thank you, Pam. I think the idea of murder of crows, why they call it that is because there's an old folktale where the crows will gather and decide the capital fate of another crow, and then they knock it off.
Probably.
I like that. Well, no, it's an old folktale, and there are many other ones, but that one kind of figures itself, right? Because crows are smart, and if one of them has been off, so to speak, I can see him gathering around to decide its fate and then kill it, just be rid of its unsightly image. I like that picture, too. That's a nice, and that murder of crows to open up was a nice start with it. But so was that second line, withering, dried, diseased, frail black branches stalk against moonlight sky, eerie, shrouded in gloom. Mist, slowly raising, as if from the grave, damp, musty, chilling, heavy air hung like a pendulum. I like that one cutting notion to it. And then the offering up, the stories, folklore, myths, legends, all these have their note in history, little notes to what the townspeople have given to it over the years. So I like that. And the back end is well done, too, with the sort of how the, like that, the Legend of Sleepy Hollow with Johnny Depp, where that tree opens up and swallows bodies. And then the bodies get visaged in the tree itself as it sucks out their blood. So I like that. And this kind of paints the same thing with the portal closes. It has to be, they have to be returned or forever walk the unknown, because at least going back into their portal, they have a home for the rest of the year until Halloween comes once more.
I like it. And yes, great observations there, Rex. And yeah, you're definitely right. There's a lot of mythology involving crows and ravens as being, and not just mythology, but they are very intelligent animals. And, they are in mythology, oftentimes messengers of dreams and death. But this was a great write by Nan.
Smart enough to throw nuts on the ground and wait for cars to run over them so they can go down and eat what's inside.
Yep. That's the smart way to, especially some of those harder nuts, like, oh my gosh. I used to live in a house that had a black walnut tree. And it was nice. It was a nice tree, but The squirrels would try to get the black walnuts open, and oh my gosh, it would make, and it was right by our porch, over our porch or our back deck, and it just would make this huge mess. So yeah, I could, that would definitely be smart.
All right, what's next?
All right. Up next we have Disenchanting Force the Foul Death by Jenny the Deep. Perched on a haunted hollow tree, skeletal-faced vultures wait to feed in an eerie force of disenchantment. Violent, volatile vagabonds are sent. Hazy shadows cover the full luminous moon. Shady mist spreads across daunting dunes. Doomsday approaches those who wander through deceiving verdant hills of wonder. Decomposing twisted branches creaking, cracking, causing concussions, crows come attacking, pecking people's pupils, out devouring brains. The horror of evil birds of prey now reigns, swooping off tormenting trees of death. Flying cretins peck and claw out your chest. Blood around the full moon gives warning. On all Hallow Eve, demonic fowls will be swarming. Stay out of the alluring misty woods tonight, or face a torturous, terrible night of fright. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like that note in the opening up. Skeletal-faced vultures wait to feed. Nice touch. In an eerie forest of disenchantment, violent, volatile vagabonds ascend. I like that one, too. And then the notes where she dips into the, what was that one? Decomposing twisted branches, creaking, cracking, causing concussions, crows come attacking, pecking people's pupils out, devouring brains. The horror of evil birds of prey now reigns. Oh, yes. We got a little bit of Alfred Hitchcock with the birds rolling in. And I did that note to Hazy Shadows had me think, well, to roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy nights of Halloween. Well, anyway, well, this murder of crows and violent vagabond vultures are having themselves a feast. Nothing like being first the ones that'll kill for a live meaty meal, but those who pick up the mixture afterwards, the vultures, they do the real cleaning. they could be out there in the heat and sun for a week, and they'll still come and eat the stuff because they don't care. It's free food.
Right? Oh, man. We don't even have vultures around here, but the animals will still do that. You'll see, like, you know, eagles, hawks, all kinds of different animals go after these smelly, bloated deer carcass. So, but, yeah, great comment there, Rex. Yeah, I really liked her imagery. This was just a great horror, right? I mean, it was visceral, it was dark, it was creepy. She had nice touches of alliteration. The alliteration of pecking people's pupils had me had the song One-Eyed, One-Eared, One-Eyed, One-Horned, Flying Purple People Eater going through my mind. And yes, you were right. I thought the same thing about Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, especially when she goes, the second to last stanza, swooping off tormenting trees of death, flying cretins peck and claw on your chest, blood around the full moon gives warning, on All Hallow Eve, demonic fowls will be swarming. It also, there was the demonic fowls, F-O-W-L-S, made me think of the other song that you had in your contest for rhythm and rhyme, the ghost chickens. You know, I just thought with the use of alliteration, the dark imagery, you know, she just told a great tale here of these ominous bird-like ghosts. So very cool and very well done.
All right. What we got next?
All right. Let's see here. Up next, we have The Ghosts on the Tree by S. Sharp. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
The Ghosts on the Tree by S. Sharp. Birds hang on limbs, winter shadow, leaves that never drop, chirping in the wind, overseers of time, demarcated by lines crossing lines, somewhere in the darkness, notches in the bark, echoes emptied of everything but life. Fog grabs moonlight's throat, strangling tangible light, footprints in the dust, swept away by gusts, swirling, dark clouds engulf the present, shadows meeting light, where breath meets stillness, another bird lands, shaking the limbs of life. And poem. All right, what you got?
Hey,
uh-huh.
great read there, Rex. I really like how he personifies how he brings to life the tree and the fog and the birds and, you know, everything. Like, it's brought to life, and yet at the same time, it paints an absolute complete picture of death. This has wonderful imagery all the way through. But I do especially like where he says, somewhere in the darkness, notches in the bark echoes. I feel like those notches in the bark could be like, I think of like a serial killer making a notch in the side of a tree every time a victim is killed. Or perhaps it's something as simple as, you know, the birds digging for insects. But I feel like the notches have an important significance, an important meaning. I also really love the line, fog grabs moonlight's throat, strangling tangible light. You know, you can imagine that kind of night where it's so dark, it's so foggy that barely any light gets through. And again, for some reason, I don't, my mind goes in the wrong direction, but I think that that could also be taken as a metaphor for the hands of a killer strangling somebody's throat, taking away their life and their essence. But no matter what Scott meant by it, I think it's just a brilliant dark night with amazing imagery and very well done.
Nice. Thank you. It does hit that image of the tree with the birds in it quite well. It paints the angle of darkness, the fact that they hang on a limb, winter shadow is leaving its note there. But they're the leaves that never drop. They chirp in the wind. They're the ones overseeing time. The notches in the bark, my guess is names, numbers, directions. It doesn't really matter. They're stuff that people leave or kids leave. Echoes emptied of everything but life. I like that because he hits on that one again. Another bird lands, shaking the limbs of life. The idea of the tree still lives somewhat because it's in sleep mode, yet it is grabbed in that darkness because of the act of winter itself. And that note, fog grabs moonlight's throat, strangling tangible light, footprints in the dust, swept away by gusts, swirling dark clouds engulf the present. The idea of moving into that realm of darkness where the shortest day of the year is now upon you, and you wake up in the dark, and before you know it, 6 p.m. comes around, or 5 p.m., and it's dark once more. So that note of 8 a.m. being dark in the moment, and then at 5 p.m. being dark again. It's on that idea of the angle of a world in peril, so to speak, because of the darkness. So, nicely done, Scott. Thank you very much. All right. We've got time for at least one more.
Yes, we do. Maybe two, but let's see here. All right. And up next, we have Ghosts by Arliss. And it goes like this. As soon as it opens, try that again. There we go. Ghosts no longer haunt me in this thin state of confusion. I see gray where they see nothing. Force of habit drives them from their perch, even ever deeper into the earth's fiery core, where they claim to cherish the flame. I shun all contact with them now. I write from the well of my imagination. Ignore their nudges to notice the dull details of their reality. Proud like chest-thumping apes, they flash their yellow fangs and roar. I cannot conjure belief in them anymore, though they insist on oppression and grief, though they reek of brimstone and sweat. Their slim slip of power mimics the tawdry crown of a self-appointed tyrant. Ghosts no longer lurk on limbs and shadows at dawn. Their habitat will be clear-cut lumps of ugly soil laced with fragments of bark. Nowhere have they left a lasting mark. Tonight, they will return to rebuke my litany of rejections. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I can see this on two levels. The idea of I see ghosts, so to speak. And then, because he hits on that, ghosts no longer haunt me in this thin state of confusion. I see gray where they see nothing. Force of habit drives them from their perch, ever deeper into the earth's fiery core, where they claim to cherish the flames. That could be the idea of someone who sees ghosts and knows and has chosen to ignore them and just... as he hits on the second stanza, I write from the well of my imagination, ignore their nudges to notice the dull details of their reality, proud like chest-thumping apes, they flash their yellow fangs and roar. That hits on the idea of them showing a bit of anger and pain in the moment because they've been ignored. But it's also to walk on that note of being over the edge to the point where they've finally gotten help, and their mind is mellowing out, so to speak, to the point that, yeah, there's no such thing as ghosts, but I prefer the first angle, considering I used to see ghosts, now I just ignore them.
I like that. Great observation. And it does seem to be quite the layered right. I did see it as the whole idea of how things, on one hand, on how things look different at nighttime than they do in the day, how that tree right outside your window can be so scary and some living creature that's out to kill you, and in the daytime be completely innocent. The imagery and metaphors in this was great. I really like where he says, I see gray where they see nothing. Force of habit drives them from their perch, ever deeper into the earth's fiery core. Really dark and eerie. I like how he mentions how they will come back. Tonight they will return to rebuke my litany of rejection. I also really like the line, their slim slip of power mimics the tawdry crown of a self-appointed tyrant. A wonderful nod to tyranny and the limited amount of power that it ends up having in the long run, you know, especially if the people find the voice. So excellent write and very well done. Did you want to try to fit in the last one, Rex?
I guess it depends on how long it is.
Well, we can always carry it over. It's, I think, medium length. It's not long. Well, here. Why don't we just go ahead and... Yeah, that's not too long. Go ahead and give that a read.
The Valley of Vultures by Virtual Anomaly. The crust of earth, an eggshell cracking, craving to swallow by the sounds up above. The breath of specters entertains the vultures who measure their thirst by the size of their eyes. The lust for mirth, a valley of fracking, save in a hollow white ground for a dove. Like Hannibal Lecter, crooked trees are a sculpture. They please at first as their prize slowly dies. A howling moon watches, dim light for the feeding. Still air becomes wind as they drop in for prey. Just a yelp upon impact, a roiling boil of pulling, with meat in their throat, fox spices their beaks. The scowling of foxes in fright of the bleeding, despair becomes thin as they stop for a day. Must have kelp lingers long, exacted spoil of drooling. With heat in their coats, the bark whimpers and creaks. And pumps.
Great read, Rex. Oh, man, I am really impressed with this dark write and learned a new word, fracking, the process of injecting liquid at high pressure into subterranean rocks to force open existing fissures and extract oil or gas. Very cool. This had a really nice flow to it. Brilliant imagery. Love the mention of Hannibal Lecter. The lust for mirth, a valley of fracking, saving the hollow white crown for a dove, like Hannibal Lecter, crooked trees are sculptures. They pleasure at first as their prize slowly dies. You know, dark, creepy lines on the idea of the young, the sweet, the tasty, the innocent, who bring such pleasures until they're of no use anymore. I also really like the flowing of foxes in fright of the bleeding. Despair becomes thin as they stop for a day. You know, the hunters stop for a day, but eventually they start up again. Great write and very well done.
Nice. I did like that opening, the breath of specters into the vultures. Measure their thirst by the size of their eyes. And then it finishes out with must have kelp lingers long, exact spoil of drooling, with heat in their coats, the bark whimpers and creaks. There's a quiet note to a double hit on that. The thought of the vultures getting up their bellies full, but also the bog itself as what is left kind of sinks into the morass. And it just disappears. I like that. Obviously done virtual, and I like the scriptures in this, eerie and dark. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Great comment. An awesome show tonight, Rex.
Yes. Some humor, some darkness, some twisted malarkey, and some fun.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful night.
All right. Good night. Happy Halloween.